One thing that I learned in secondary school is how to be a hustler.
I think I have wicked tendencies, but I'm not wicked.
You're always saying bad energy stay far away, but
bad energy stay far away, but you're the bad energy.
I dare you to lick in Kechi's pants.
You guys don't know I have brain. I have brain.
First of all, nobody asked. Second of all, your outfit is actually trash and we don't care.
The only time I'm on my knees is, well, that's classified.
Chidera, this is a family channel.
I hope my mother isn't listening to this podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Care Package. It's episode 99, that means 1 to 100. Yeah. On today's episode, we're bringing you another guest. I told you guys that we're coming with guests. So we're bringing you another guest, and I'll just let him introduce himself.
So hey guys, I'm Honcho. Well, government name, Chide, but most people call me Honcho. CEO, founder of Honcho Properties, and I do a bit of everything, from being a chef to being a DJ, property, anything. So that's me.
How did the nickname Honcho even?
Where did it come from?
Do you know what it actually came? Like, this was actually back in secondary school. Like, there was a man. I was looking at the thesaurus, and I saw the name. I was like, I think it meant, so basically, Honcho, like the definition of Honcho is someone who is the leader of a company or a leader of a group. So I was like, do you know what? That's the kind of nigga I am. So, literally, like that name, I don't know how, but I literally used it for every single personality like I had in my life. So literally everything I've done, I just
buy DJ Honcho, Chef Honcho, Honcho Properties.
Land, bro.
You understand? So like that's literally where the name came from. And I feel like for me, I've always been good with names. Like a lot of the companies, so some people that I consult for, I give them names, and thing is for me, like I always feel like names have importance. You understand? And I feel like maybe the name Honcho, even though like this was something that I picked out like when I was 15, 16, it actually holds a lot of weight, because in reality, I've been the boss in my field like every single time, every single time I enter something, I boss that particular industry. So that's the issue where it came from.
I didn't realize that I had such meaning.
I don't know what the experience you like. I don't think it's Quavo Honcho.
Do you know the whole Quavo thing? Quavo's spelled is Honcho with a U. So I always used to hate when people thought, oh, is it Quavo Honcho? Because I'm like, nah, my own Honcho is with that O. Quavo is with a U. It was mixed up on the bar.
But guys, before we get into the main gist of the episode, we're just going to give you a quick catch up on what's been going on everywhere. Have you guys heard about the 48 oysters in one sitting?
Basically, this babe, she went on a date. Her and the guy agreed that they were gonna go for drinks, but then they went to this place where they were doing, was it $15 for a dozen oysters or something like that? First of all, that's even crazy. Like,
that's wild.
In Atlanta is not, like, there's no sea by there. So the fact that somebody's able to provide you 12 oysters for $15, that's already sus. Then she ate 48.
That's crazy. She ate 48, but that's just her apps. She still had crab cake as her main, and she still had desserts.
No, I mean, my own thing is not even that she's, she is greedy, but that's not even that. How can you eat 48? Because oysters are, like, raw. Like, after, like, two, and two is even stretching it for me. I'm not gonna lie. The fact that she was able to eat 48, like, that's the kind of woman you can't mess with. Her stomach is strong.
Bro, but I saw on TikTok, apparently people went to the place and they asked about the oyster lady, and they were like, yeah, no, she's here every week. So, man, is she pounding 48 oysters every week? Or she just decided that day she was going to live her best life? I hope he's well. We spoke about this last week, but Jada Pinkett has been running a madness on the internet. I think Jada just needs to put it away. Like, what's the latest thing? I'm just like, the story just never ends. Like, it's always one thing or the other. What's the latest one this week? What did she say?
She said that, okay, first of all, that's when we spoke last week. She said that Han will, like, they've been separated for 7 years. She doesn't rate him. Calm. She said that she doesn't understand why he slapped Chris Rock. Okay? Calm. She said that Tupac is her soulmate and the love of her life.
Okay. Guys. I don't even know where to start from. And, you know, I feel like at this point, she should just come out and be like, I've never met Will Smith. Like, nothing will shock me. Nothing will actually shock me. But yeah. And then lastly, for those of you that watch the NFL or you're a Taylor Swift fan, I'm sure you've seen that Taylor Swift is dating Travis Kelce.
You guys, I asked her who the hell that was, and she wanted to eat my head off.
If you remember a Super Bowl, so basically, you know how the Super Bowl was the Eagles versus the Chiefs?
Mm-hmm.
So, the Eagles has a player on it called Jason Kelce. And the Chiefs is obviously Travis Kelce. So, this is the first time they've ever played against each other in the Super Bowl. So, it was like the Kelce Super Bowl. Whoa. And then the Kelces are just famous for, like, they're just crazy people. Like, they have a podcast as well. Their family is quite, like, funny and stuff like that. So that's how people know the Kelces. And whoa. Travis used to date a black influencer, I can't remember, Kayla Nicole, I think. And they broke up. And everyone was like, oh my God, who's he going to date next? Because you know how on TikTok there's a white boy of the month? You know, we had Miles, whatever his name was, Jack Harlow. So white boy of the month during the Super Bowl was obviously Travis Kelce. So yeah, and then it came out that he was dating Taylor Swift and everyone's kind of like, what the fuck? Like, where did that even come from? But yeah, that's all.
Wait, but like, why were people like angry about the fact that he was dating Taylor Swift?
I don't think people were angry. I just think people like didn't expect it, you know? Like, I feel like Taylor Swift was with music guys. So she's now dating an NFL player. Everyone's like, don't really know about this one. But yeah,
I didn't even see. This is how I know that I'm on a different side of the internet from everyone. Because I didn't see any news about Taylor Swift. And I don't really love it. Whatever she wants to do, she should do.
I really don't know that.
His previous ex. Yeah, I think I saw his ex before. Like,
yeah.
I mean, personally, for me, that was a downgrade. But I mean, love is blind.
Who was his ex before?
Yeah.
I don't know who she was. I didn't know who she was till I saw it, but like some black influencer.
Okay,
a lot of NFL fans were pissed because people were saying Taylor Swift put Travis Kelce on the map. Everyone was like, someone that got to the Super Bowl, please relax. Anyways, moving on to the main gist of the episode, we're here to talk to Huncho about Huncho Properties. So, you don't mind telling us, can you share a bit of background and how you just essentially got into like property development, house flipping?
Yeah, definitely. So property development, like this was, we're talking like, let's say 8 months now, 8 to 9 months. So that's when I actually officially started the process of buying my first property. So so when it comes to financing, okay, I've been saving for like years. I'm talking about years. So when I came to the UK, came here like 2016, then started uni 2018. So I started working when I went to uni. And also like when I was DJing back in uni, like I was talking first year, second year, all the money I was getting from gigs and everything, I was just putting it aside. And obviously this was something that I kind of learned from my friends, whatever. So yeah, so when it came to financing, like, I've been saving for a good amount of years, and also like I've been lucky to have a good network of investors around me. So 8 months ago, started the whole process of buying the house, which was very, very, very long. But so started Huncho Properties 5 years ago. I actually didn't create the name till I actually finished buying the house. So like, I was still skeptical whether I wanted to make this thing a whole company. I was skeptical whether, you know, like, I actually wanted to be a property developer or even be a property consultant. But, you know, once I closed it and I started to work, I was like, you know what, I can actually do this. So, yeah, I started on the logo. So I designed the logo myself, you know, registered my company. And, yeah, you know, now we're here, flipped a few properties, and now currently living in the property that I just renovated now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Wow.
So how many properties do you have now? One or?
So currently under my name, I have one, but I flipped another property. Yeah. So. Okay. So the cash from that property was what I basically just used to renovate this one as well.
And the one you live in now, where in the UK is that one?
So this one is actually in Peterborough. So it's so the thing with property development, the key is to find areas that are upcoming, which you can invest early in, and then obviously experience capital growth. So what I mean by that is, obviously, as we all know, London is really expensive. So a lot of people, trust me, London is expensive as hell. So a lot of people, what they started doing was moving out of London and moving to outer cities that were commutable to London. So the first area where most people like were rushing was Dartford, so which is, you know, like, let's say, a 40-minute to 15-minute commute to London. Yeah. Then a lot of people start coming to, from Essex. So now Peterborough is like the next best thing from my analysis.
How long is the commute from Peterborough to London?
So by car, we're talking about 1 hour, 30 minutes. Then by train, you can get to King's Cross within 45 minutes. And then obviously go where you want to go. So it's technically really close to London. So yeah, that's where the house is in right now. Obviously, for in the future, this is going to be like an Airbnb house, so people are going to come in, week out, and just, you know, utilize the property, but yeah.
And is there like a big Airbnb market in Peterborough, though? Like, are people coming to Peterborough?
Yeah, so the thing is, with the Airbnb market, so Peterborough, in a nutshell, it's a really family-based area, so a lot of people with kids and, you know, younger kids, older kids, they come here because there are a lot of schools here as well. So actually, my property right now, the closest school is like a 2-minute walk. So it's a very family-orientated area. And a lot of CEOs, a lot of executives and whatnot from companies, they actually get posted to Peterborough. So they actually work here and then go back to, you know, then go back to London to their various homes or whatever. So sometimes when they come to Peterborough, a lot of them need a place to stay. So they use a lot of Airbnbs, booking.com, essentially. So, you know, just get a 3-week or 4-week stay and then go back home.
Yeah.
And then, Anugo.
I was just going to say, in terms of saving,
how did you,
like, have the discipline? Because it's nice to hear that. From when you came to the UK, you were like, this is what I want to do. So you started saving. Yeah. But were you just like, regular saving, or were you also like investing, or were you like, because people talk about all this like high yield savings accounts and the UK, like,
ISA, cash ISA.
I'm just asking, how did you?
Yeah, 100%. I think obviously, like, as a Nigerian coming to the UK, sometimes like a lot of these things are is that information overload, because what someone is telling you about ISAs, you know, when someone is telling you about like a capital high growth, you know, page, I don't even know how the banking system works. So, you know, for me to start finding out, you know, a lot of these things, it was tough. So in terms of savings, I think I just generally saved. I wasn't even saving for a property. I was just saving like in general. So let's say like, if I got like £500 now from a DJ gig, I will save at least 200 from it. So it was like a habit I literally just started cultivating. And in terms of investing, apart from my crypto mess, I didn't really invest that much. I was just saving, piling it up. Then I think it was literally just after COVID, I was like, you know what? Let me actually try the whole property market. But I was teasing it. I wasn't too sure. I was like, okay, maybe this might be a potential. So I just kept on putting more money into my savings account. And to be honest, one of the things that I would say helped me was my parents. So basically, the way an ISA works here is every time you put money, in layman terms, when you put money into the account, okay, diligently every month, okay, at the end of the year, the government rewards you by topping up your money. So if you save about £1,000, the government will add £1,000 extra. So in the year you have £2,000, instead of just £1,000. So that's essentially what I was doing my parents as well. So my parents were essentially my lifetime ISA. You know, yeah, they were my ISA scheme. So every time I save, let's say £2,000 in the year, they will add like £800 or they will add like £500. So that way I was also like encouraged to keep saving. So that's what you want to do. But the thing with saving now and the thing with the property market right now is it's been so inflated that saving for a deposit now for a house, it will take you minimum 5 years. And that's like 5 years of dedicated saving every single month, which obviously like is basically impossible because you're not like, you don't know what you're going to earn every single month. Like you don't know, job security is also a very big thing now because, you know, a lot of sectors have experienced job cuts and whatever. So yeah, like when it just comes to saving, I'll just tell people that save the little you can. Because the moment you get into the habit of saving, when you have 100k, when you earn 20k, when you earn 30k, you're always gonna have the same principle. So yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like the fact that my savings and my current are from the same bank, and if I was like, oh, I need $10, boom,
you just move money from the
same. No, trust me, even me, I've done it now. I literally just did it today, so trust me.
I was just gonna say the thing that you said about information overload is so fast because like there's just so much like, oh yeah, you should be doing this, you should be doing this, you should be doing this. I'm just like, please, I'm just a girl.
I'm just a girl for real.
No, I think like information overload, like in terms of financial advice, I always tell people, like, do what you feel you're comfortable with. That's literally what it is. I never make uninformed investment decisions. Every investment I make, I read up about it. So when it comes to property, for example, I have a team of builders, okay? Before I employed those guys, I was literally on YouTube every day checking up, okay, what is this? Okay, what is an electrical fit? You know, first fix, what is plastering? You know, what is, you know, like, you know, how do you buy plasterboard? How do you put up plasterboard? So, because for me, I don't like being in situations where I've employed somebody and I know nothing about what this guy is doing.
Literally,
they can finesse you like without even you knowing. Do you know what I'm trying to say? So, when it comes to information overload, like I said, just do what you feel is comfortable for you. Like, with the whole crypto thing, it was literally a hype investment strategy. Like, a lot of people were hyping it up, but I was a victim of it. Like, to this day, I still check my crypto account to see if there's still money in it. So,
crypto to the moon.
To the moon, for real. To the moon.
I think Shell mentioned it on one of our previous episodes. It was like, don't invest what you don't feel comfortable losing.
Yeah,
100%. If you can't afford to be like, okay, $50, you know, I won't think about it. Cool.
Yeah.
If you can't afford that $150, better keep it in your account.
Yeah,
but alright, and in terms of like, this is part where I get really excited. In terms of like the actual house flipping of
what
would you say your design style is? Are you more like, are you classical? Are you modern?
Yes.
Minimalist?
Maximalist? Yeah. So, generally, I'm a minimalist. So, I am. Like, even every single place I've lived in, everybody can say that Honcho literally doesn't like too many things. That's just me. And I think sometimes it works in my advantage, sometimes it doesn't. Because, so the thing with working with clients is, historically, a lot of women that I work with, they lean more to the modernized, but, you know, traditional, you know, design setting, whereby they still want the whole minimalist feel, but they also want the house to feel homey. You know, they want the plants here, they want this there. And I'm just the kind of person that I'm like, hey, look, once you put a sofa, you know, picture frames, this, that, you're good. So for me, generally, in terms of like my design style, I specialize in restructuring properties. So once I come into a house, yeah, I can already see how I can open the space of the house a lot more. You know, I can, for example, a lot of the common things I do, you know, a lot of my properties when I flip is, once I come into a kitchen, if the kitchen is a good enough size, I can convert that into a bedroom. And then I flip the kitchen as an open plan into the living room. So that's one of the strategies in which I do. So for me, yeah, like I said, when I work with clients specifically, so like in terms of investments and whatever, when I work with investors, I try to at least ensure that the property is livable. You know what I'm trying to say? I don't, because one mistake a lot of property developers make, or upcoming property developers make, is you place a lot of emotional attachment to the property, especially when you're not living into it. So that's when the costs start coming in. Instead of spending, let's say, £100 on a plasterboard, you end up spending about £500 because you want it to look, you know, pristine, yes, to look classy. No, just do the bare minimum with the standard, which is what I do. So the bare minimums I do, they have a standard. So if you go to any house that I've touched, there's a specific standard, you know. So yeah, like that's literally my design. So yeah, like I work, you know, I focus on restructuring and essentially just making the house feel a lot more modern, you know. So yeah, that's what I do.
Interesting. I'm definitely all for modern design.
Yeah.
Architect.
Put some respect on my name. Yeah.
How do you balance kind of, what do you do, like 9 to 5, and how do you balance that with property?
Yeah. Do you know, at some point, some people thought I wasn't working anymore. So
I did.
Fair enough. But yeah, I'm a project manager. So I work as a project manager for IT platform. So what I do within my work is I specialize in risk management. So when I work with companies, when you're implementing a program or a software, I ensure that everything goes well, there are no risks and everything. So and luckily for me, I work from home completely. So yeah, that's literally why I've been able to juggle the two. Because so the thing with property development, or being a property developer, a lot of property developers, in the long run, they end up switching to property development as a career because it's a 9 to 5 on its own. Because from viewing the property to making the offers to talking to agents to now project managing the, you know, the whole project, like it's a lot. And like I said, the timeline actually falls into your 9 to 5 industry. So, for example, I can be in meetings and then an agent is calling me on show, can we schedule meetings about this property, whatever. So sometimes it can get very, very, very demanding. But I think for me, like, my experience with multitasking literally helped me, because what I've been able to juggle being a chef, being a DJ, also working, like, so I already have this experience. So for me, I'm not a newcomer, that's just what it is. But I think eventually, like, I will definitely come to a decision where, like, I have to choose one, you know, especially if one is making a lot more money for me. So yeah.
And then you mentioned kind of, you kind of talked about how, like, some people, like, get emotionally attached to their house and spend the money that they're supposed to spend, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. How do you kind of, like, when you kind of bought this property, how did you kind of decide, okay, this is how much I'm spending on flipping this, no more, no less? And did you stay to budget? Because I heard a lot of people that are, like, kind of renovate houses, they don't stay to budget at all.
Yeah. So,
please don't question my English.
So, I mean, so, like, with the budget itself, I had a build team. So, I actually work with a contractor. So my contractor came in the house when I first viewed it, and he told me how much it would, you know, the cost of renovating the whole house would cost. And you know, we looked at it, and so with this particular property, it was different because I let him buy the supplies and the materials, because at that time when I was renovating this house, I was living in London, so it was very difficult for me to get the support. So I just felt that he should handle all that. So when it comes to the cost, we actually stayed on budget. But one of the issues we had was, generally, I don't really like talking about money too much, you know, in terms of in the public when it comes to property development. But, you know, I'll give you an instance. So we budgeted for a specific part of the project, which is, let's say, gardening. And it cost X amount. But when we actually rewired the whole house, so meaning with this house, they had two lampshades in the lounges, and everywhere literally had one bulb. So I put spotlights in the whole house. So when the price of that came, it literally ate up the budget for the garden. So even though we stayed on budget, there was a specific place that literally we couldn't touch. So because of that, when the whole renovation project finished, I was still left with the garden. So right now the garden is actually not currently under renovation. So the thing is, when it comes to budgeting for the renovation projects, I always advise people give a 10% contingency plan. So
yeah,
10% minimum. So if it's 20K, just leave aside an extra 1K. So like giving that 10% allowance literally gives you room to play. Because the thing with renovations now, if you were to ask me where the money actually goes to most of the time, is labor. My dad is basically into property, he's big time in Nigeria. So even when I started my property journey, I was just getting a lot of content from him, just essentially gaining anything I could gain from him. And he would say the exact same thing, that in construction, the thing that will literally kill you or make or break you essentially is labor. Labor costs are really high. Right now, to actually hire a builder in any trade, we're talking about £250 a day.
Huh?
Yeah, £250. £250. I'm saying that one of the painters I worked with, the guy earned about 70K, and I was considering just doing that.
Who needs degree anyway? Please.
Building cost, builder cost, labor cost are one of the biggest things, when it comes to property.
Yeah. And then I know you mentioned a few seconds ago, you were like, you watch those of YouTube videos on how to plaster and all that.
Yeah.
How involved do you get in the flipping process? Like, are you out here on the job site, wiring bulbs in? Do you get involved in the process?
Funny thing, I was having a conversation with my friend on this, and I was literally just telling him that I'm not a DIY guy. I'm really not. I would be the guy to pay for professionals to get the job done. For me, the only reason as to why I would do a project by myself is if I feel like, if I do the ROI calculations or if I do the cost analysis, and I feel like I'm doing it myself, would be a lot cheaper than hiring a professional. I would do it. But with my renovation projects, with my flipping projects, I give it to my builders because I want quality. And in order to achieve quality, you need to put in the time, and I don't have the time. I don't have the luxury of time. I'm literally working. I'm also doing XYZ. So I can't dedicate like 4 hours of my time in a day or in a weekend to go up to the property to go and fix one or two things. Because if I do that, that house won't get finished, because it lost my flips, by the way. What's the word? I literally just forgot the word. But essentially, they're time sensitive, because some projects I do, if you have time, I can explain the whole process. But in terms of financing a project, there are loans we call bridging loans. So these are time specific loans in which you're meant to drop the house, flip it, or refinance it. So a lot of the projects I take on or I have equities in is really, really time sensitive. So I don't have the luxury of time to spend like, let's say, 9 months or a year or 3 years on the renovations. I have to be in and out. So yeah, I typically just use a lot of, you know, my builders to do the works, complete it, and, you know, get on it.
So would you say you have like an established like team of people? So like legal, like architect, contractor, builders, like do you have an established team, or you kind of like, you have a network and you kind of like move around that network?
I have a network. When it comes to like the team, I always tell people, and I have advice to tell people is, I think the only way you can be a successful property developer is by having a successful 3 team or 18, as I call it. So that's your broker, so your mortgage broker, your legal team, who is your lawyer, and the estate agent. If you don't have those three in the bag, you're never going to become a successful property agent. And I will explain. So with the legal team, so when I bought the property I'm living in right now, the legal team literally, it was funny because I used about four different lawyers. I used about four different lawyers during the whole process. And that's because the first one I used, they were wasting my time. The second one, they were being too intrusive with my financial record. So they kept asking me, I won't really say what they were doing, because obviously, like, I don't really like to victimize myself, but they were being a bit cheeky. So they were asking a lot of questions, and also maybe the fact that I'm from Nigeria. So I just decided
it wasn't giving a conducive environment
at all. So like, I ended up using four different people. Then the fourth person, I still had the same issue with the fourth person, in terms of like they were being very invasive, but at some point, I was just like, do you know what? Let me just let them do what they have to do. I'll just close on this property. Then in terms of your mortgage broker, so essentially, a mortgage broker is a middleman who helps you get the loans from the bank to get your mortgage, essentially. So these guys, I feel like they're very important to have in your team, because the right mortgage broker will get you the most money from different lenders. Okay, and then the third one, which is actually the most important, needs to have good relationship with the estate agents. Like, I literally call the estate agents my girlfriends. Like, I have about 15 or 20 literally in my phone. So with these guys, you have to build a relationship with them, because these are the guys that will call you up and be like, "Yo, Andre, this property has been on the market for like 10 months now. Do you want it?" And I've actually had a lot of those deals. And, you know, once you have that kind of relationship with that person, you can literally get the cheapest deals, like, in and out every single time. So, yeah.
Question.
Mm.
The UK rental market is in a terrible state.
Is the
UK buying market like that as well?
In terms of what? So, like, in terms of the price?
In terms of, like, price? Yeah. Is it really difficult to find a place to buy?
Firstly, I don't think it's ever difficult to find a place to buy. There's always a property on the market to be bought. That's one. Two, in terms of if we're talking about price growth or an increase in your property's value. The market right now is a weird one, because yes, the papers, statistics do show that house prices have fallen by at least 5% as to what it was in COVID, which is obviously very, very understandable. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Cost of living, interest rates. So house prices are definitely falling, the house values are falling. However, that's good for investors, that's good for developers, because people like myself, we can go in and get a property below the market value. So I wouldn't really see that as something to moan about, because for every, the wise saying goes, one man's poison is literally another man's food, or one man's food is another man's poison. So that's how I see it. So with the low price market value, it's good for me, it's good for other developers, because I can buy properties cheaper. But in terms of house value as a whole, how, like, property is an investment that will always hold its value. Like, if the, you know, if the value drops now, it can pick up in the next year, the year after, the year after. So with property, like, it's something that sometimes you just have to put your money in it and just close your eyes and just leave it. You know? Yeah, no, literally, because what, so I always tell people, so for me, my theory is the two ways to sort of experience, let's say, profit growth in the, you know, the property market. Number one, yeah, accumulated price growth, which is essentially, in mathematical terms, capital appreciation within a certain amount of years. So if you own, if you bought a property for like 80k today, in 10 years time, you definitely won't still be valued at 80k. So that's one of the ways you can make money in property. And a second way which you can make money in property is by then redeveloping the property, flipping it, or, you know, reconfiguring it, just renovating it. So there are a lot of things you can do with property, man. I think for me, my advice is always to let people just know that, yo, you don't need to be scared. Just block out the noise, because a lot of investments like property, because it's such a large investment, there tends to be a lot of noise from different people. Oh no, don't buy, you know, the market is failing. Trust me, the people are saying that if they have money, they will put it into property as well. You get what I'm trying to say? So there's for every investment you make, there's always noise. But this is where, like we were talking about earlier, you have to read on it. You have to like be comfortable doing that. Do you know what? This 10k, this 5k, this 20k, this 30k, I'm gonna put into property or something like that.
I wanted to ask about DJing, actually, just a quick segue. That kind of, do you still DJ? And okay, how did you get into it? Why did you stop, if you stopped?
Yeah. So with DJing, when did I start DJing? I think I started DJing in the Waterman, but briefly. So when I was in secondary school back in Lagos, I DJed briefly, but I was still like teasing it. I was, because every house party we had, I would always just bring my laptop, and I used to play with virtual DJs, so that's what I was doing. Then when I came to Canterbury for A-levels, I bought my first deck, so I saved up for it at the time. Then I bought my first deck. It was like this small. I literally can't remember the name of it, but it was like a really, really small DJ deck, and that's how I started. In terms of why I got to it, I just really liked music. That's just like literally what it was, and I felt like I had like this dopamine feeling of making people happy, you know, in the party. So yeah, that's literally where I started. So yeah, then obviously I went to university. My first year, second year, it literally blew. So I was going to Leicester, I was going to London, I was literally going everywhere. No, I was literally doing a Malta at the time. It was good for me because I made a lot of connections. On and off the club. And I think generally someone like me, that's literally where my personality or my persona came from. Because being a DJ, you have to be extroverted, like you can't be in your shell. And I think it kind of took me out of my shell and like made me start networking with, you know, a lot of people. Why I stopped, I think it was just because of money. After COVID, the market dried up. I was like, this is not making any sense again for me. Because when I first started DJing like in uni, I was making a lot more than what a lot of people were making in their like 10-hour shifts. So for me, like, I didn't even need to work throughout the whole of first year. But you see, when COVID came, I was like, yeah, maybe I don't really have a passion for this thing. Maybe I was just doing it because I liked it and I was making money. So yeah, I ran away from the market. And, you know, and I think, to be honest, like, a huge part of my decision was because after COVID, like, I did a lot of like self-reflection. I was like, you know what, my personality doesn't really gel with being a DJ, in the sense that when you want to become a DJ, when you DJ, for you to make it big time, you have to make it your personality. You know, I'm sure like if you check the Instagram pages of a lot of popular DJs, that come from Lagos or just DJs in general. Like every single thing they post is about DJing, whether it's new music, whether it's about mixing. And I was like, oh look, like I see myself as a businessman. You know, so I was like, oh, this is not, you know, this is not for me. Like this is not what I'm actually like called to do. So I just said, you know what, let me just change, you know, trajectory and do something else. And yeah, that's literally why I stopped. But I still DJ only for the right, you know, price. So if somebody, you know, yeah, so if somebody, oh, 100, you know, if the money is, you know, the money's talking, I will definitely bring out my
name. The money is talking. Hope you guys heard. Okay. Hope you guys heard.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then in terms of the Chef Honcho side, I don't think you sell or anything like that on that side. Is that just kind
of you're doing? Yeah, no. When it comes to chefing, I've never wanted to sell food like in that traditional catering aspect. Because of maybe two things. Generally, like number one, I just hate being on the beck and call to everybody. Because basically when you're a caterer, you have to, like your phone lines and your Instagram handle, whatever, it has to be open to anybody at any time. I didn't like that. Like what people messaging me on top there, more 100, this guy makes some jollof rice, like fuck off. Yeah, fuck off. Like I'm not trying to do all that. So that's why to me personally, I just felt like, you know, the catering side is not for me. And I think generally, when it comes to cooking, my aspirations are like my main goal is to have an established restaurant. So I don't want to go ahead selling food and losing sight of the main goal. So yeah, for me, Chef Honcho, especially the Instagram page, it just started because like I just like posting food. I like posting the food I cook, so I just decided, hey, look, you know, I'm just gonna do it. And at some point, like my TikTok blew, but that's when I knew that content creating wasn't really for me because after that, I just couldn't be asked, man. Like,
no, no, like, content creation is hard. Just post that you blow, yeah, you blow. Hard, but, like, to sit down to actually be doing the editing and all that.
When
I'm cooking, I'm not trying to think about, okay, let me take a picture of every step. Like, I just want to do this.
100%. I think even in podcasting, like there's so many times me and Anu, we won't even speak to each other. We'll just be like, we're taking a break, huh?
Yeah.
Like the burnout is crazy.
Yeah. But I think with content creation, like for me, something that a formula that has always worked hundreds of years, like 200 years, 300 years, is consistency. Once you're consistent with something, eventually it will click. That's just what, you know, literally whether it's content creating, whether it's like your side hustle. Like the more you're consistent with it, yeah, the more you keep pouring your energy into it. Because I think for me, like when it comes to food, I realized that I wasn't consistent in it because it was really time constraining for me. Like when it comes to my food, I think one of the things I specialize in, you know, in is plating. I know how to plate food really well, so I design my food very, very well. And for me to do that, it takes a lot of time, and I can't be doing that when I'm working. I'm doing XYZ, so I just said, you know what, it's not. Yeah, it's not really for me.
Yes. And then to finish on property.
I know, yeah. I'll bite you.
come, bite me.
Anyway, to finish on property.
Yeah.
What would you say, one, are your like future plans for Honcho Properties? And then what advice would you give someone trying to get into property development?
Okay. So yeah, I mean the future for Honcho Properties, literally flipping more property, working a lot more with investors. So like a lot of the projects I've done, I've worked with very, very close investors. So like I'm talking about family and friends, and a lot of it has also been my money. So in property, I think the only way you can grow is when you leverage finance, and that's literally what I want to do going forward, using other people's money to make money for myself, instead of using my own money, because you see when I use my own money, there's a lot of risk attached to it. So I don't want that. So yeah, going forward, a lot more flips. So what I do essentially is, because I'm doing this thing to create or maintain generational wealth. So property ownership is something that's still big for me. So I don't want to keep flipping properties, and at some point I realize that, you know, I don't even have a portfolio. Because that's what a lot of developers like I've seen do. They keep on flipping houses, and it gets to a point where they just have a huge sum of cash. Or some don't even have a huge sum of cash, they just have a good amount of cash and then they don't have a good portfolio. So yeah, going forward, I just want to keep, I'm actually in the process of acquiring another property right now to flip. So yeah, I'm just in the flipping phase right now. Then in terms of the advice to people, I mean, like, depending on what, like, what advice would you want to give? Because, you know, it's, yeah, it's really wide.
I think maybe one thing that people don't expect about the world of flipping that you found. Okay. It's like an information tip.
Insider info. Your first or second project, or your third, will probably be fucked up by a fucked up laborer. Trust me, like, yeah, because, so when it comes to builders, because it's really difficult to regulate builders' performance. Yeah, like, it's really difficult to regulate the business, you know, builders' performance. So, you know, like, a lot of the times, you can get what we call cowboy builders who come to your property and they do very shabby work and they literally run away, you know, or they come to your house, do one or two things and they, you know, we can I swear? I can swear, yeah?
Huh? Yeah, you can swear.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, they do one or two things. Yeah, so they do one or two things and they fuck off. So, yeah, like, one thing you need to realize, because obviously when I started, I was a bit pissed off about it, but I was like, hey, look, it happens. Something that's always going to happen in the market is you're going to end up with somebody, unless God is on your side, someday, somewhere, you'll end up with a very, very bad builder. So my advice for people is just, like, not to really deep it too much and just get on with it. And also, to prevent it, before you start a project, always vet your building team. So an advice I would give people. Background checks is big. So background checks. If the builder is asking for the money up front, just know that guy is,
they're asking about Canada.
If he's asking about the money up front, no. And I think, thirdly, if the guy is available straight away, that's a big red flag. That's a big red flag. Like, the proper builders, they will at least tell you that, okay, mate, you know, it'll probably take me like 2-3 weeks before I start the property. That's what you mean. Like, but the one that I want, you talk to him on Tuesday, yeah, mate. Thursday, mate, you know, yeah, I'm ready. That one don't have.
So, yeah.
I mean, I guess one thing I would give away in terms of, like, property for people that want to get into it is, property development isn't the only method of getting to property. Like, now there's so many different strategies which people use to make money in property, rent to rent, Airbnb, you know. And I think for me, like, when I work with clients, because right now I've been working with one or two people, so on a consulting basis, so when I consult with them, I generally ask them what their budget is. So once they tell me what their budget is, then I can then tell them what strategy we can use, because there's no point trying to teach someone how to flip a property when they already have like 5k in their account or 2k in their account.
What's that thing? You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, like, when it comes to property, like, you don't have to have a lot of money to start. You have to have some money, Shad, because a lot of people keep saying, oh, yeah, how to get into property with no money. That's bullshit. Like, you have to have some.
But how much is enough money?
10k standard.
To be honest, I think he's actually pushing it to be honest. I would say standard, if you want to make a good profit or if you want to see some sort of revenue growth, I would say minimum about 3-4k.
Okay.
Yeah, so 3-4k. At least
you guys can save
3-4k is very easy now. Within a year, it's easy.
Yeah.
Just don't go to Dubai or don't go night for dates.
He said no girls trips for y'all.
Yeah,
no girls trips.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. To talk about Hunter the brand. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. We are so happy that we had Hunter here to talk to us. Where can we find you in your different business ventures? Do you want to plug your Instagram, your Twitter? Where do you want them to find you?
Yeah, so as the plug, I've got my Instagram, so Hunter Properties. Literally, if you just go to my bio, so my bio obviously is Mr. Hunter. So you can find like the details of Hunter Properties. My email, hunterltd@gmail.com. You know, if some of you want to go and become my company to see if it's real, Hunter Properties Limited. Some people actually do that, trust me. So yeah, I've had someone like, oh my God, you know, the property real, the property company real. And she searched it up and I'm like, yeah, that's real. So yeah, Twitter, I'm not on Twitter yet. TikTok as well, Hunter Properties as well. So if you want to see like videos of how I flip properties and redesign them, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you guys for listening in. As usual, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Care Package Pod and TikTok at The Care Package Pod. We are releasing our 100th episode next week. So if you like, just stay tuned to our socials. There's going to be some renovation being done. But yeah, guys, that's all we have for you guys in this episode. Thank you.
Bye.
This package has been signed, sealed, and delivered. Thank you.